This is a Capricorn FM podcast.
Literally, as we came across in the small plane, came across the border from Botswana, it was like a hallucination because everything suddenly became green. And the pilot announced to the plane, ladies and gentlemen, we have now entered the borders of South Africa. Everybody started crying and cheering, my dad, my mum, all the ANC people. And it was perhaps the most emotional journey.
In 1990, Oliver Tambo returns home. It was a flight from Botswana, a few hours, ending years in exile.
Beyond us, as far as I could see, there were people. And they were all holding banners and plaques of my father's face. And it was something that I'd never seen before, something I hadn't imagined.
Owar was home, finally. The day was 13 December. And by his side, Dali and Selani Tambo. And his wife, Adelaide Tambo.
We have endeavored to forgive. And we continue to teach forgiveness because we want to build a better future for the children of South Africa, all the children of South Africa, black and white.
Yeah. Exile had been home to the Tambo family for more than 30 years. Owar had heeded the call by the organization to go, as the instruction was, to the frontline states, to go to Lusaka, and the instruction was to wage war on behalf of those who had stayed behind, to keep the organization alive.
We longed for our father to visit us on his occasional opportunities and dreaded the day that he would leave.
Owar Tambo died in the early hours of the 24th of April 1993. His death came a year before the country elected Nelson Mandela as president.
We have now tasted freedom. And I can assure everybody that they are so determined to keep their independence, their freedom, that they will pick up ordinary stones and bring down bombers and crush military tanks. So determined they are.
But tragedy had struck the liberation movement in many ways. Some never returned from exile, as Tambo and others did. And even as freedom was within reach, Chris Hani was shot and killed, assassinated. Others died in political violence. Tambo was now back in the country, but never fully recovered from the stroke of 1989. His death shook the country and its people.
It is a grave pity that a man who has contributed so much to the struggle against apartheid should leave us on the verge of victory. His contribution has been magnificent. It is not always easy to keep an organization together, even in peacetime, and even when the organization is functioning legally. But to keep an organization together, operating from abroad and underground in the country, and to raise it to a position where it is acknowledged to be the strongest political force in the country, was an achievement beyond words. And this has been the contribution of Comrade Oliver and the team that he led. And we're very sorry indeed that he should leave us before he sees the fruits of his sacrifices.
Our Tambo had buried many a friend and colleague in exile. In defiance, even in death, they were buried with the ANC flag. Now it was 1993, the eve of victory, and here lay the man who had carved the path to freedom. Many symbolically saw the years of struggle embedded in the body of the man they were laying to rest.
He is the architect of our freedom. He led us to the threshold of our democracy. It remains a source of great sadness that he did not live to finally cast his vote for a government based on the will of the people of this country.
There was sadness that day because it was a life short-lived for Oar as a free man, robbed of fully appreciating freedom in his country.
Where he is today is able to look back and say 20 years of democracy in our country have indeed delivered a lot of what he struggled for. 20 years of our democracy today have indeed advanced the lives of our people. And as he looks, he says, what we struggled for was to have democracy in our country, to have non-racialism, to have a non-sexist South Africa, and to have a prosperous South Africa. And wherever he is, he asks himself, have we made advances in that regard?
Cyril Ramaphosa represents today the ANC at the highest level. He has witnessed in a free South Africa the organization's highest achievements, but also its lowest. He believes today, even as the party falters somewhat, that Tambo would approve.
The government that is led by the African National Congress can proudly say, today, as we remember Oliver Tambo, a colossal leader of our struggle, we're able to say, we do have a good story to also tell Oliver Tambo, even as he is no longer here.
South Africa will be transferred to a country of all South Africans, of all races and creeds. That is inescapable.
Today, the Nkontolo village in Bizana in the Eastern Cape carries proudly the weight of the legacy that is Tambo. It's a hard life here in Bizana, even for those the recipients of this new freedom. There is also this frank expression from Monlingu Gubela, who looks out over the Nkontolo village with us and says much more should be done to honor the likes of Tambo and others.
Do we appreciate this freedom? That's a major question we'll find it very, very difficult. But are South Africans really enthusiastic about this freedom? If, how do they associate their enthusiasm with this situation? And I think we must accept all of us, Ekurhuleni included, all of us who haven't done well yet.
This is where Tambo was born. And like many in the former Transkei, he attended a school of the Holy Cross Mission, an education anchored in religion. It shaped his young years. Fort Hare was next, and Tambo and friends, including Nelson Mandela, were politicized by what they saw and experienced. They led student revolts, marches, and were soon on the wrong side of the law, so to speak, but on the right side of history. In 1943, Tambo, Nelson Mandela, and Walter Sisulu were co-founders of the ANC Youth League. Their inclusion in broader ANC discussions were to change the course of history forever. They proposed a change of tactics. Petitions and peaceful demonstrations were insufficient to achieve their goals. Now was the time for boycotts, civil disobedience, and strikes. It was also the time of Hendrik Verwoerd and Daniel Malan.
What is our future? Now I want to make quite sure that I will not be misunderstood. I am not using this occasion as a platform for putting forward ideas other than those which I hope will help to bring unity, prosperity, and happiness to South Africa. I see our republic, the republic of the English and the Afrikaans speaking alike, governing what is the heritage of white South Africa.
In 1946, Tambo Star was rising. He was elected into the Transvaal executive of the ANC. He watches 2 years later, in 1948, how again the National Party is voted into power by the white electorate.
Certain restricted measures had to be taken recently, mainly to ensure the protection of the masses of all races who seek peace and order. The record of stable government will continue in South Africa.
The National Party had campaigned on the promise of introducing a system of apartheid. Discrimination against blacks would be extended and formalized. 10 years later, in 1958, apartheid is entrenched.
Mr. Tambo, why did you flee South Africa?
I left South Africa to avoid being arrested under the emergency.
What chance of any effective resistance to the South African government's policies is there?
Well, the resistance is going to continue. What one can't be so sure of is the method that it's going to take.
After the Sharpeville massacre, I phoned Oliver and I said, when are you going to do something? And he said, I can't talk now, quite rightly, because all our phones were tapped. So we got together, both of us banned, and we started talking about the ANC plans when someone opened the door and said to us, you'd better go, the special branch is next door. And as we reached the pavement, the newspaper arrived with headlines, African National Congress to be banned. And Oliver turned to me and said, there is a standing order of the National Executive that in the event of Congress being banned, I should go abroad and set up Congress in exile. I said, I'll take you. I mean, it was as natural as breathing in that situation. We had a drive of 1,000 miles, and sitting next to a black at that time was very suspicious. But if the black wore a uniform, then he was obviously a servant and it was okay. So I dressed Oliver in a chauffeur's uniform. He said goodbye to his wife and we left and drove across the border to what was then Bechuanaland. We had no papers. Oliver didn't have a passport. Passports were very, very rarely given to Africans. And mine had been formally confiscated. So once we were in Botswana, we were stuck there. And it became increasingly dangerous because the South African government had put an extradition application out generally for our return, for having committed the criminal offence of having left South Africa without a passport. And that night I got a call from Frenny Genois saying that she had got us Indian documents. And just as dawn breaks, there's a mosquito buzz in the distance in this little plane. I mean, so alarmingly small, circles round, comes to a stop, and out jumps the pilot and gives us papers. I didn't believe that we would be airborne until we were, and then we tree-hopped all the way to Dar es Salaam.
Ron Siegel was a journalist and was also being pursued by the authorities. He was associated with the struggle, and OR in particular. The two had become good friends. Now they were leaving the country together.
The next morning, fingers crossed, I was waiting at the airport. They all arrived, and I met them, took them to meet the various Tanganyikan leadership. And within 24 hours, I had Oliver Tambo out, and he went to Britain.
Decades later, Frenny Chinwale was to become the first speaker of a democratic South Africa. Back then, she was instrumental in getting many a comrade into exile. But it was tough for those who started out, and for OR Tambo, there was no exception. There were no resources, no funds, no support.
There were very difficult times. We would go for a conference or a meeting, and you'd say, where is Oliver Tambo? And you would find him somewhere in a small hotel. His life was in danger. He had to sleep in different places. There were times when he was without food, without the kind of basic needs people had, but you could never see it on him. And was always impeccably dressed, took great care, and just carried this enormous amount of dignity in terms of the mission and the cause that he had.
Abdul Manti was a friend, also in exile. It soon dawned on everybody that the dream of returning home soon was not going to happen. The struggle would be protracted and violent.
Mr. Tambo, a large number of the members of the ANC who are active operationally have been trained in the Soviet Union. Is that true?
Yes, that is true.
Well, the question is, what conclusion should we draw from that?
The only conclusion you can draw is that the Soviet Union has been willing to assist us with the kind of assistance we want. If the same young man had gone to Canada to learn how to shoot, how to handle a weapon, how to fight, we would say that Canada is ready to support us to win our independence. But the reason we go there is not to ask to be influenced by Canada, by the Soviet Union. We ask to be assisted with a struggle that we started a long time ago.
...1960 was Tambo's first year in exile. On the African continent, things were changing, and the promise of independence was alive. In Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, Julius Nyerere was leading the charge. And it was also here in Dar es Salaam that Tambo opened the ANC's first office in exile on the African continent.
The people of South Africa have protested at being treated as less than human. We who live in freedom have no alternative but to give them whatever support we can give them.
Tambo's strategy was to seek aid and diplomatic support from the African states, but his mission was to take the fight to the United Nations.
When the African countries became largely independent in 1960, they constituted a bloc within the United Nations, and therefore it was using that leverage it had.
1976 caught us unprepared. We were still building up on mass mobilization and building up on our armed struggle. But we found ourselves unable to respond to this brutality. After that, the struggle was at a new level. and we had to quickly adjust to that new level.
The arrest of Nelson Mandela, Walter Sisulu and others earlier in South Africa was tormenting O.R. Tambo in exile. He was in exile, yes, but still a free man. Now he was obsessed with two things: to see his comrades freed, and possibly, in his lifetime, democracy in his country.
I had no doubt in my mind that the death penalty was going to be imposed, because I knew the extent of preparations made to sabotage the material that was ordered, and that in any country this type of a thing would be met by a death penalty, and worse, therefore, in a fascist country.
Comrade Mandela and Sisulu in particular were leading us on towards this realization that this is going to be, it may end in death.
At least four of us were going to be sentenced to death. That is Governor Mbeki, Nelson Mandela, Dennis Goldberg, and myself. We were therefore preparing statements which were going to be used in the event of a death sentence. And fortunately for us, the judge, who gave us an impression that, at least me, that there was no other sentence he was going to pass. And this was the situation in which we are.
We were locked up after we were taken back to jail, and we were told that we are going to be in communal cells. But that very night, they came at about 12 or 1 o'clock and suddenly put on the lights and they said, get ready. And then they chained us, handcuffed us, and the leg irons. I was chained to Mbeki, I remember. And under very, very strong security, the army, the police, and the prison, we were driven to a military airport, put on the plane, and taken to Robben Island.
Over the years, the struggle against the apartheid government had become violent. It had become a just war against evil itself. Violence was the last resort, even if Tambo had now been convinced. But others in the movement, to this day, probably still, were not. And they still question that argument.
Well, to be frank, my views were mixed with fear. Fear not only for myself, and that was there, naturally, but also fear for the organization.
From prison, Nelson Mandela was also directing affairs. Comfort in the knowledge that his freedom was not the bargaining agenda with the National Party government.
My father says, I am in prison as a representative of the people and of your organization, the African National Congress, which was banned. What freedom am I being offered whilst the organization of the people remains banned?
History and time had caught up with apartheid and its masters. The world had changed. Apartheid was now viewed as racism in its most blatant form, and more countries viewed South Africa as a police state of tyranny. Gone also was the view that violence, when perpetrated by white on black, was okay, but violence by black on white was not.
The election of Comrade Nelson Mandela to the post of president.
I would not hesitate to underline the importance of the exercise of correct leadership at moments of revolutionary change. In this context, I have no hesitation in saying that Oliver Tambo was an outstanding revolutionary democrat, a principal theoretician of the perspective of the National Democratic Revolution to which ANC is committed, and consequently a central architect of the popular forces which would have an obligation to lead the offensive to achieve that national democratic level revolution.
Tabo Mbeki became the second elected president of a democratic South Africa, after Nelson Mandela. His journey from exile had led him to this point, leader of the movement and then president.
Unless we produce other leaders and cadres of the caliber of Oliver Tambo, it is almost inevitable that the national democratic revolution will fail. What distinguished Oliver Tambo are an unwavering commitment to serve the people of South Africa with no expectation of any personal benefit. And this affirmed the value system at the center of which is respect for the fundamental principle and practice that leaders are there to serve the people.
Mbeki, like Tambo then, acknowledges that no revolution is worthy of its name if it does not know what to do with it afterwards. And the question is, does the ANC today know what to do with its freedom? Or, as Mbeki hints, that it is, as the country might be, unguided and merely adrift.
I must say that I am deeply troubled by a feeling of great unease that our beloved motherland is losing its sense of direction. And that we are allowing ourselves to progress towards a costly disaster of a protracted and endemic general crisis. I, for one, am not certain about where our country and nation will be tomorrow.
For more podcasts, go to capricornfm.co.za and follow us on social media at Capricorn FM.